We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day. We hope you enjoy your stay. Outside the sun is shining, it seems like heaven ain't far away. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day.
Hello and welcome to the 12th and final Long Box Graveyard Podcast. We're coming to you today from the, the bat-infested cave beneath Wayne Manor. I'm Paul O'Connor. For the next hour or so, I will be your host for Comic Book and Geek Chat. Joining me today is Chris Ulm, who you may remember from the Few 52 podcast we did a few months ago. Chris is the former editor-in-chief of Malibu Comics and one of the biggest Iron Man fans I know, which is why I've asked him to provide the recent Iron Fan guest blog at Long Box Graveyard. It's also why he's joining me today to discuss the recent Iron Man 3 movie and our spoiler-filled point and counterpoint podcast. Although I think it's going to be more like point and point because we agree on this particular picture. Before we get to the movie, a little bit of news. As I indicated last month and confirmed at the top of the show, this is the final Long Box Graveyard podcast. I've done the show for a year now, once a month without fail. I've greatly enjoyed the process of putting the show together and conversing with you all, but I'm reevaluating a number of commitments in my geek life. And with this 12th issue, this seemed a good time to step away from podcasting. I will admit I always saw the Long Box Graveyard podcast as an adjunct to my blog, which is at www.longboxgraveyard.com. My primary purpose in starting this podcast, aside from exploring the forum, was to drive awareness and traffic for the blog. So, how have I done? Well, the podcast has done pretty well. As part of the We Talk Podcast Network, the Long Box Graveyard podcast has benefited from the rising tide of that network in this last year, and the show has had some respectable numbers in its own right. A brief overview, the past 11-ish episodes, here's how they've ranked in terms of listenership. The top episode of all time of Long Box Graveyard was my third episode, which was Digital Comics and the Illusion of Ownership. It surprises me this was the most popular one. That had about 2,600 listens. And going down from there was the Few 52 with my co-host Chris, A Tale of Two Pitches, where we talked about our Steven Spielberg experience. Next, coming at number four, was The Ritual, where I talked about going to Comic Cons and why we do it. Episode one, Childish Things, the first episode of the Long Box Graveyard podcast, came right in the middle. Next was Holy Terror, the long episode I did with my son Miles, where we talked about Frank Miller's book. Episode 10 was Marvel Comics' Space Odyssey, and then going down from there, Form Follows Function. Episode number 11, the top 10 issues of Amazing Spider-Man. Now, this only had 1,200 listens, but that's only been out for a month. So, actually, by the time all is said and done, that'll probably end up being my most popular podcast. And Mark did a good job on that one. Great job on that one. And then The Curse of the Marble Value Stamp and The Dark Knight Rises were my least popular listens. The last one, Dark Knight Rises, came in at about 1,000 listens. And I hope those numbers for Dark Knight Rises do not bode poorly for this show because I'm doing another movie review. Anyway, the point is you've shown me excellent support, thousands of listens for the show. I genuinely appreciate that. The podcast hasn't generated many referrals from my blog overall. And what this shows me is that the podcast deserves to be its own thing. The problem is that I'm a blogger rather than a podcaster. And while I've enjoyed exploring this form, it really isn't my passion. The numbers you're showing me tells me that you deserve for this podcast to be a bigger production than I've made it. And lacking that ability, you know, to provide that, I think it's better to bring the podcast to a close rather than to continue on widening vectors, leading me into a podcasting commitment, you know, a hobby that doesn't really compel me at the expense of a blogging hobby that I still wish to actively support. And so this will be the last Long Box Graveyard podcast, at least for now. Nothing is ever forever until it is, and we live in a world where the Guardians of the Galaxy are getting a movie, so anything is possible. This might be, there might be Long Box Graveyard podcast one-offs in the future. Mo Christensen at We Talk Podcast has graciously offered to host such shows if I choose to do them, and thanks, Mo, for that. while I'm a bit singed trying to prepare for these shows of my own, I'm happy to crash other podcasts every now and then just to vapor on and on about whatever nonsense comes to mind. So hopefully I will continue to fill your ears with a few guest appearances here and there. But for now, and for real, not an imaginary story, this is the end of the line for the Long Box Graveyard Podcast. So let's send this out with a bang. Please join me in welcoming Chris Ohm to the Long Box Graveyard Podcast as we discuss Iron Man 3. Welcome, Mr. Ohm.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Thank you for sitting through my canned open.
Yes. I predict you'll be podcasting again soon. That's what I predict, but I just go on record and say that.
Yeah, well...
I've been doing that for years, Paul.
You and I have been friends long enough that you've seen me quit finally and forever any number of things. The key about when I quit is I do mean it. Mm. I always mean it.
He means it. That's not true.
Well, no, it's not that it's not true. It is true when I quit, and it's true when I unquit.
That's right.
But I don't... I'm
already leaping forward to the unquit.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that'll be the case.
So Iron Man.
Iron Man, yeah. So you and I saw Iron Man about a week ago, and by a strange trick of fate, we just saw Dread.
Yes.
Which has nothing
moments
to do,
ago.
Nothing to do ago. With Iron Man, but I invited Chris over to the house today to do this last podcast, and I saw Dread when it came out in the theater, of course, late last year, and then we had the Blu-ray, and Chris hadn't seen it yet, so we saw Dread as well. So I don't know if that'll work its way into the conversation. That's certainly the fresher movie in our minds right now. But a week ago, we saw Iron Man 3. I saw it opening night, which is a rare bit of geek cred for me, as I saw it before you. You're the biggest Iron Man fan I know, but you saw it opening weekend. So I guess you get to keep your phone card, you don't have to turn it in.
I had to wait till Sunday.
Yeah. But seriously, you're a big Iron Man fan. This is the third Iron Man picture, maybe Iron Man 3.5 if you count Avengers, which is kind of an Iron Man picture as well.
Certainly the audience is counting Avengers based on the extraordinary box office that Iron Man 3 has done.
Right, well, 175 first weekend, second largest opening box office of all time.
Also a huge improvement over Iron Man 2.
Yes, in terms of box office. I don't necessarily think in terms of quality of picture.
Right.
I think
we're just talking box office.
Maybe plateaued or maybe took a step down. I'm not sure.
Also, new director.
New director, yes.
Shane Black.
Again, I'm not convinced that was the best choice, but apparently Mr. Robert Downey Jr. wouldn't make the movie unless he got his guy, and his guy was Shane Black.
That's right.
But I'm not sure that the director ever does his actors a favor by doing what they want. There were some dramatic choices in this picture that I think were driven by the actors. I read, for instance, that one of the reasons there's so little Iron Man in Iron Man 3 is that Robert Downey Jr. doesn't like wearing the suit. I mean, on the set, he doesn't like wearing the suit. He doesn't like acting. I can understand how it encumbers his movements, and maybe it's difficult for him to perform his craft in it, but he doesn't like wearing the suit, so we didn't get a lot of suit in this picture.
A little bit more kiss-kiss Iron Man this time around.
Yeah, not necessarily for its benefit. Now, to be fair, you, Mr. Ohm, Iron Man fan from way back, obviously. You guest blogged at Long Box Graveyard recently.
It's a brilliant blog, by the way. You should definitely read it.
That's right. Please read my blog. That's the only place you're going to get me after today is at the blog. But you did the Iron Fan blog for me a couple weeks ago, which was really cool because you talked about how Iron Man was the first comic you ever read, right?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you walked into the liquor store in Culver City, and there was Iron Man number 53, was it?
Yeah, it was the one. It was the one where why must there be an Iron Man?
That's right.
Oh, sorry, why must there be an Iron Man?
Karmically, pencils by at the time he was Barry Smith. Later he'd be Barry Windsor.
Barry Windsor Smith. That's right.
And he'd be your co-collaborator in creating Rune at Malibu Comics many years later.
That's right. And I had no idea, of course, at the time. All I remember is being dazzled by the artwork, and I loved Roy Thomas's writing. Who I still love Roy Thomas's writing when I'm rereading these old comics.
Me too. I think Thomas is just the soul of the Silver Age and really, and he just gets better with time. Anyway, the point is just to establish your bona fides. You are an Iron Man guy.
Yeah.
You've loved the book through thick and thin, and there's been a lot of thin, as you pointed out in your blog. Iron Man's always been cool as a concept. Tony Stark, maybe not so much so. There's been some real ups and downs. There have been some unfortunate episodes like Iron Man's nose, for instance.
Very damaging. Also, the anime style armor, not good.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, you just endured George Tuska, for years. So that tells me that your guy, Iron Man's your guy. And when Marvel placed its big bet on Iron Man, kind of because they had no choice, right? Because Marvel's going to make movies.
Yeah, you tortured me for weeks about that.
Yes. But they were really, you look at their bench, you know, what had happened. Avengers was biting off too much. They mortgaged Spider-Man and Fantastic Four to other studios.
And Daredevil.
And Daredevil.
And X-Men.
And Ghost Rider. And X-Men.
And Ghost Rider. Basically, everybody that was an A character was gone.
Right. So they looked down the bench and said, it's time to make a movie. And here's this guy in golden armor at the end of the bench. It's like, Iron Man, grab a bat. You're up. Right? So it really was kind of this crazy circumstance that got this franchise to the screen when it did. And Robert Downey Jr. had disgraced himself and was, at the time this movie was being made, and nobody would hire him for anything because he was a drunk and unreliable and all the rest of these things. And it had some disaster written all over it, and I was happy to amplify that disaster
I will point out that when they announced the movie, way back when, that it was going to be done, and it was going to be Robert Downey Jr., I said he was perfect.
Yeah.
I was a total supporter. I thought he was going to be great, and I couldn't wait to see the movie because he would make Tony Stark into not so much of a douche, and he did.
And you're completely right in that, and you were early with that, and I agree. And I disagreed with you, not so much because I disagreed with the premise as much as I just enjoyed disagreeing with you.
This is a little revisionist. I think you're just dead wrong. This is a few times, I think, in our relationship that I've actually just been right.
You were right.
Thank you.
No, I'm suddenly.
This is now recorded, by the way, for posterity.
I'm acknowledging that you were right, but I will admit that even I, looking at it, thought, "Hey, this formula could work," and I suspected it would. But I had more fun tormenting you by claiming that it wouldn't, so that's what I did. I'm not saying I'm a good person. I'm not saying I'm nice.
Well, that would be pretty hard to defend.
So anyway, Iron Man 1 comes out, and it's a tremendous superhero picture. I think probably a top five.
I think it's the best superhero picture.
I think Dark Knight disagrees with you, but horses for courses. We're talking about chocolate and strawberry now. It's more down to taste than to quality. However, it's a great picture.
It certainly belongs to be in that winner's circle, the top three superhero movies of all time.
Yeah,
I'm going to put it in there, right? I mean, yeah, you can disagree. I think it's the best, but you know what? It still belongs in that top three.
Yeah, I'd go top five, but you know, that's only if you hold my feet to the fire. Certainly, there's no, and maybe it is top three if I really sat down and broke it down. But I think maybe Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2 is in there someplace, right? But there've been, you know, I looked on IMDb the other day. There's been 150 pictures that qualifies.
A lot of superhero pictures. Now.
And this cream really rose to the top, and it was fairly early in the cycle too, in terms of superhero films. And it was Marvel going out on their own for the first time. You know, it was Paramount Marvel Picture, but it was Marvel branded. But a tremendous success and a surprise, really, because what they had to do, you know, geeks like us, you know, we and the hardcore 2,500 people that are listening to the podcast, we know all about Iron Man. We can tell you all the differences between. Right. They know I can drop a George Siska reference and they get it, you know, right away. But your average guy, or more importantly, your average woman who's
has no idea.
Yeah, who's driving a lot of these box office decisions? This Iron Man, huh? Who? What? Oh, they think of maybe the Ozzy Osbourne. They think of the Black Sabbath.
That's right. That's right.
But nothing else. So a tremendous job by Marvel to make the character relatable, to tell a great superhero story, to use the technology to correctly have some really good casting, smart screenplay, good direction. It's a great picture, and I watch it once every couple of years. We saw it most recently at the Avengers Marathon. It was really
good. Saw it 2 weeks ago, and I can be right. I was getting myself psyched up for Iron Man 3, and I've got to say that Iron Man number one, or Iron Man, is not a great Iron Man movie. It's a great movie. It's a great movie for people that have no interest at all in Iron Man or superheroes or Marvel or the Silver Age or anything. We talk about it at work, and all the guys that aren't comic book fans are like, I loved Iron Man.
Yeah.
And, you know, we sat and watched every single Marvel movie before the Avengers in that marathon. Everyone said Iron Man 1 was still the best of all the movies.
Yeah, I agree. It really stood out.
You know, it's a great picture. And a lot of the I think it goes to great direction. I think it was a really solid script that was told very, very well. I think Robert Downey Jr. was brilliant in making up the character. And I think that the special effects were good, but they didn't overwhelm the picture.
Mm-hmm.
The picture had heart. It had humor. It had romance. It had a pretty interesting villain. It had a great subtext in terms of someone who was, you know, realized that their past was going the wrong direction,
mm-hmm.
and you know, a redemption story. Had everything that was in there to make that a great story, which Iron Man never had in the comics.
Yeah,
they had to take all these pieces together and put it together into one movie to make all that stuff happen. So you know what? Marvel is brilliant. The guys running Marvel movies. Brilliant.
Yes, they should hire us. I'd love
to work. Yes.
Well, that's been the genius of Iron Man and of the more successful Marvel pictures.
Yeah, Thor and Captain America,
Cap as well. And that they've taken this kind of crazy history, you know, 50 years of history of comics, and they've sifted it for these nuggets and brought the best parts out and made them work.
The taste has been great.
Yeah, it's been really good.
Taste.
Because Iron Man, you know, there's some rough sled in there. I mean,
some terrible.
If I had to direct a criticism against the first picture, it would be the... it would be the villain, right? It's because
Stain.
Yeah, and it's because I like the performance. I love the performance.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, I mean everybody, but it just wasn't a great villain. But Iron Man doesn't have a lot of great villains.
No, the bench is pretty thin.
Yeah, arguably his greatest villain is the Mandarin, who you know is served up for a pratfall in the third film. We'll get to that in a second. Yeah. I always think of MODOK as being
MODOK.
An Iron Man villain for some reason. Now, MODOK checked in at number 7 on my top 10 Captain America villains list a couple weeks ago, but that's strictly because he was introduced in a Tales of Suspense. I think of him as being Captain, but I think of him being more of an Iron Man villain. And, you know, when AIM made its notational appearance in Iron Man 3, my pulse jumped a beat thinking, oh, okay. You know, is Guy Pearce going to end up being MODOK by the end of this picture? But alas, no. But it does keep the stunt casting alive that maybe Peter Dinklage of Game of Thrones can be MODOK at some point.
I would be so in. So in.
Seems like a man born to play MODOK.
Anything that Peter Dinklage is in, I'm in.
But we don't get MODOK, unfortunately. And in the second Iron Man picture, we get Whiplash, who's, you know...
But come on, that was a dull Whiplash.
Yeah, and I got to admit...
Character in the comics is terrible, but you know the character in the movie isn't that much better.
Yeah, Whiplash would have a hard time, you know, breaking into the Flash's rogues gallery, for instance. Captain Cole
is better than Whiplash.
Yeah, I think Daredevil's rogues gallery is better than... Then, yeah, I don't think Whiplash could get
there. I think Plastic Man's Rogue's Gallery is better than than Whiplash.
But you got... And Mickey Rourke in a kind of a rare tone-deaf performance is okay, but he's not Mickey Rourke.
I mean, he's intense, but you know, at certain points, it's a very one-note intensity that goes all the way through.
I will admit I was a little disappointed with him, just like I was disappointed with Javier Bardem in the last James Bond picture. Because he's this great actor, and I loved him in No Country for Old Men. I loved him in The Sea Inside and these other pictures, and he came out and played this kind of eccentric one-note guy. In both cases, it felt like, look, this is a great actor. It's probably pushing the director around, you know, hitting him over the head with his Oscars and saying, I have a vision for what this character is going to be. But it didn't do the audience any favors. You know, he just wasn't that great in that picture. And Iron Man 2 also suffered the traditional sequel bloat, more of everything. You know, multiple Iron Mans now. We have Don Cheadle as you know, emerging as War Machine. And
who's good? I mean, Don Cheadle is a good actor.
Yeah, I
like him much better than in the first movie.
And I think he's one of the really good things about the third picture as well.
Yeah.
But so that second film, you know, it wasn't great. I don't think it was a war crime. It was still better than maybe either of the Hulk pictures that Marvel's done. But it was a little bit of a return to Earth after Iron Man, when you couldn't help but be a little disappointed. But then after that, Marvel steps up to the plate, and they do very well with both Thor and Captain America. And
I thought were terrific pictures and very difficult movies to pull up. Both those characters are impossibly difficult to make great movies on.
Harder than Iron Man, because in a world that has or had Steve Jobs in it, that has Bill Gates in it, that has who's your buddy that's with the
Elon
space,
Musk.
Elon Musk in it, right?
There you go.
That has these characters we can think of. It's semi plausible someone could build some crazy battle suit and become a superhuman character. That's a lot harder to sell us on, you know, a super soldier serum, or God forbid, literally God forbid, a thunder god from the heavens swinging a hammer around. Those are harder to swallow, but they pulled it off in both cases, I think. And those are characters, of course, near and dear to my heart. And you as well. I know you're a Captain America fan, especially with Captain Thor.
And Thor fan, too.
They're probably my top Marvel heroes. So we love those pictures a lot. And then last summer, the capstone was Avengers, which had a gigantic degree of difficulty because it's hard enough to make these characters compelling on their own. But when you got a bunch of guys standing around in a room in full light wearing clashing suits, it kind of looks like, you know, a cosplay convention. I feel like I'm in a hallway at Comic-Con. Rather, it's going to pull you out of a picture, but... Damn if they didn't pull that off as well. Yeah.
And the Captain America suit was terrible, too. They threw themselves extra difficulty by making that Captain America suit worse than the one from the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
The standalone movie.
But Avengers, obviously, one of the most successful pictures of all time.
And a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Great time for everyone.
Yeah.
I've seen that movie now 3 times. It's still fun every time I watch it.
It's very entertaining. And there was a quote, which I published on Longbox Graveyard, from Joss Whedon, who said that he didn't think Avengers was a great movie, but he thought it was a great time. I think he's selling himself a little short, but I also think that's a fair assessment that it's
a good movie and a great time.
Right. And the reason it's a great time is because it's everything that Dredd was not. Okay, we're going to bring in Dredd. Now, I should say we both really enjoyed Dredd, right? Yeah. We give it an A for Judge Dredd.
It's a great Judge Dredd movie. It's just not a great action movie.
Right. And the reason is because it's not very relatable. It's not very approachable. If you don't have 20 years or 30 years of Judge Dredd reading experience as we do, It's difficult to find that picture.
There's relatable. No humor in the picture apart from, you know, bad humor.
Yeah, well, it's like, made me
like yeah, it's O'Connor humor. Where yeah. People are getting killed, and you laugh at how they get killed.
Well, okay, that's good.
Oh, that death was funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was.
Saw humor.
But Dredd, you know, there was a lot of things that went wrong with Dredd. It was this kind of, they were sort of a nowhere land with the budget. It was not, it wasn't really low, but it wasn't really high. It was a character, you know, they went to bat with the character that they figured, we're going to do Judge Dredd by gum, and they did. It's a narrow slice of Dredd, but that narrow slice is authentically Dredd.
R rating, too.
R rating.
I mean, come on, R rating. You can't make an action picture, yeah. Superhero picture as an R rating and make it work.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that with Watchmen. Yeah. Arguably a more, certainly, I think in the United States, a more recognizable feature or property than Judge Dredd.
Certainly a much higher budget.
But Dredd does not, where Dredd really fails, it's a one quadrant picture, right? So the four quadrants are men, women.
Half a quadrant.
Yeah, men, women, young, and old, right? And it hits young men.
Yeah.
Right?
If you're under 20
yeah.
and over 10 and yeah. you love Judge Dredd, you might like the picture.
But unfortunately, you have to be 18 or older to actually get in, right?
Yeah.
Because it's R-rated. So it's a slice of a slice. And there just isn't sufficient unaided awareness with this character in the world market that people are going to turn out and understand all the tropes of Judge Dredd. Avengers wouldn't be the case either. The thing about Avengers is you've been going to superhero 101 for the last couple of years. Have you seen any of these pictures?
Right.
So if you've seen one or two of them, you've probably got enough of a grounding in the way a superhero film works that you don't need a lot of setup with those guys. And you can just kind of go with it.
Plus, you can go the other way around. You can watch Avengers first and go, who's this Captain America guy? Who's this Thor guy? Who's this Iron Man guy? And watch those movies, right? You can enjoy Avengers all on its own without having any kind of context.
Right.
It's fine, right? And that's where Joss Whedon deserves a gigantic amount of praise from everyone, right?
Sure.
Especially Marvel.
Yeah.
he pulled that off.
I think they're praising him to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, that's good. He deserves it.
And the S.H.I.E.L.D. television show was just officially greenlit this week. It was just picked up for...
That's awesome.
I don't know if it's a full season or not, but they bought the pilot and they're going into production with several episodes at least, so we have that to look forward to. Unless it's Dollhouse, in which case...
Well, you know.
Yeah, he can't... Ted Williams, you know, failed to get on base 6 times out of 10. But... with Avengers, you know, very successful picture, date night picture, gigantic opening weekend, the largest opening weekend in film history, leading Iron Man 2, which surprised being doing as well as it, or Iron Man 3, which did so well last weekend. And poor Dredd was not, you know, worldwide box office, very disappointing. DVD numbers came out at number one, there'll be no more Judge Dredd.
Unless it goes to TV, unless it goes to Netflix, or they find some other way to exploit that IP that would benefit it more. Because the problem with Dredd is it's just Dredd. Mm-hmm. He's unrelatable. He's not a movie superhero. And they keep trying to make him into that, like they tried to make him into that in the first Judge Dredd picture by giving him Rod Schneider as a sidekick and making him take off his helmet. But, you know, Judge Dredd is a merciless killing machine. That's who he is.
Yeah.
Right? And he just can't make that work necessarily as an audience pleasing to the tune of millions of people seeing it. But you can make a TV show around it. You can nicheify it.
Maybe you'd have to have a pretty robust supporting cast, because as you've pointed out in the past,
yeah, that's what you have to do.
All television shows are family shows, right?
And
I don't mean they're aimed at families, but by that you mean that they're a story of a family.
They have their roles,
yeah,
right.
So, but you could do that with Dredd, with the other judges, with
Judge
the other,
Anderson,
yeah, with the other judges, with the other judge. I can't think of any real supporting characters from Judge Dredd. I'm sure there are a few.
Bring back Rod Schneider's character.
No.
I actually didn't mind Rod Schneider's character all that much.
Get out!
It was too much shtick. Look, I admit it's too much shtick, but I liked the fact that I had a guy that would call attention to the audience of, who is this unstoppable guy?
Well, then do Walter the Robot or something. Come on, let's...
That's who he was. He was kind of Walter, but who's going to look at Walter? You can talk about a robot that has a lisp. Come on, it doesn't work.
Yeah, a couple comic relief robots didn't do George Lucas any harm with...
You got me in there.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway. We're not here to praise Dredd, although we have. We're supposed to be talking about Iron Man 3.
It's a great picture, by the way. If you haven't seen Judge Dredd, or Dredd, you should see it.
And the odds are you haven't.
Yeah.
Because it's just
go buy the DVD, do the guys a solid, because it's a good picture, and they told the best Dredd story I've ever seen on the screen.
Yeah. Also on iTunes, if you want a digital version, you can download it. It was, you couldn't really appreciate it here because I don't have 3D TV. It was, as 3D goes, it's fairly spectacular. But between Dredd 3D and high frame rate 3D Hobbit, which I also saw in the theater in 3D, and Avatar, which was in 3D. Between those three, I've concluded that I don't need 3D in the pictures.
I don't want 3D.
I can't imagine it being done better than it was done in those three films. Certainly it's
not,
been done
not better
worse.
Than Avatar, for sure.
Yeah, and in all cases, hey, you know, it's really good. I'm going to get in a John Carter reference. I'm going to get my retaliation in first. When we saw John Carter in IMAX 3D that first weekend, the 3D was pretty freaking spectacular.
It was too bad it was a poor film.
Yeah, well, the characters were all 2D.
The characters were 1D.
Yeah, all right.
And the backgrounds were 2D, and the film was 3D.
But that IMAX 3D was pretty good. But, I mean, for the all the heavy lifting involved, the extra expense, the wearing the goggles, and all the nonsense, 3D, stop, enough already. We don't need more 3D.
Yeah.
I don't think we need more.
And that seems to be what's happening with TVs, right? The 3D TV is just not working.
Yeah. Now, Iron Man 3, did you see it in 3D or 2D?
2D.
You saw it in 2D. I did as well. And we both went first weekend, which is, you know, and it was your birthday as well. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
So I've rehearsed. I've got all sorts of notes here, but.
I have no notes.
Yeah.
I've blown all this out of my butt.
So let's, and you and I deliberately haven't really talked about it in depth in the last week.
I tried to a couple times.
I know, but I should.
You keep running around with your hand over your ears, speaking in a high girlish tone.
That's right. Well, I do that anyway, but in this case, it was spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. So, so what's your letter grade on Iron Man 3? If it's pass-fail, it passes, I get the impression, but...
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a solid picture. It's not the worst Marvel picture in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's not the worst Marvel picture they've done.
Yeah.
Even among the top Marvel movies in that cinematic universe, right? I think it's better than the first Hulk movie. I think it's better than... It might be better than Iron Man 2, or at least it's on par. I think it's negligible which one's better.
Mm-hmm.
It does not move the franchise forward, though, and it's not better than Iron Man 2, and it's got some real... problems, I think.
I thought it made some real mistakes. Now, you and I are really working against the tide here, notwithstanding that it made $175 million.
It's been well reviewed, too.
Yeah, it's been well reviewed, and in the blogosphere, in the fansphere, for the most part, thumbs up. Yeah. Fans like it.
And the things they don't like about it, I don't have any problem with.
I agree with that, yes.
Yeah.
And that's
the Mandarin. The Mandarin. This is a spoiler. We're going to be doing spoilers.
Oh,
this is
spoiler every damn thing.
Yeah, we're spoiling. So if you guys don't want to know anything about Iron Man, why don't you go watch the movie and then come back to the blog.
Or watch the second time.
The podcast.
Yeah, third or fourth time. So that's the thing, is that there's been a lot of, criticism of Iron Man 3. It's like, not like we're dissecting Dickens here, right? But I think that... criticism of Iron Man 3 has been discounted a little bit. Well, you're a fanboy, you dislike it because it doesn't
The Mandarin problem bothers you.
Yeah, it's got the Mandarin problem, or it takes liberties with AIM, or it doesn't follow the comics or whatever. But that's nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, you and I both recognize the virtues of excision and compression and revision for these Marvel pictures.
Yeah,
it's required.
I'll say on the record that I love the fact that they go out and they find the best from the comics and they bring them to the movies.
Yeah.
I love that you can watch one movie every 2 years or a year and a half and get a lot, you know, this great feeling about these characters.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I feel exactly the same way.
I think in this particular case, it didn't take necessarily the best, and the things that they added didn't always work.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff I actually liked that other people didn't. I like the jokes. I like the Shane Black nonstop snappy patter. I like the kid that was in the sidekick kid. I like the basic, thrust of the movie.
I like the kid. I like the kid too. I just didn't know why he was in it. That whole second act, I don't really understand why Tony's rolling around in rural Kentucky building an Iron Man suit with Radio Shack parts and. But it's of the sins I could list of the picture, it's one of the few. But I thought that it's one of few. But the chemistry between him and the kid was good. Yeah. But the truth is,
I like that idea. I like the idea that take away everything that he had been building up.
Yeah.
So the concept that they were going for was, hey, Tony's working like a crazy man because of the anxiety from Avengers, evidently, and he's building suits to try to make himself the equal of Thor or Captain America or everybody else, right? He's trying to solve all the world's problems with all these different suits.
Okay.
And then the Mandarin comes in, or the bad guy's AIM comes in and destroys everything, and he has to start over from scratch to find out who he really is. Thematically, I thought that worked great. The movie was all thematic. It didn't come out in the actual action of the movie.
And it's not a movie that bears close scrutiny. Now, again, it's a superhero picture, right? So I'm not trying to compare it to, name the greatest film. I'm not trying to compare it to to Godfather 2, to
Goodfellas. So why is it like Godfather 2 to you?
Citizen Kane, to, you know, I'm not trying to compare it to those pictures. Compare like to like. Just compare it to Avengers or to...
No, it's not Citizen Kane.
It's not Citizen Kane, I noticed. Although it would have been better if they had a Citizen Kane type framing device. It starts off with saying, who is Tony Stark?
And then a big table where they're sitting at different opposite ends of it?
Yeah.
It's getting bigger and bigger.
A lot of empty hearths and, you know, I am Tony Stark! Rosebud! Rosebud was a suit?
Makes no sense.
Maybe not. MODOK! So what does MODOK mean?
So I'm glad we're not writing these movies.
Yeah, well, it's a good... Well, I don't think there's any risk of that.
So no, like, it would absolutely suck.
So like, well,
hey, let's do a little riff here.
Well, we'd be all right. We could solve some of the problems. At least they should let us read a draft before they committed to screen. Because there were some problems with this picture. And for me, the whole movie... I have lots of problems. I have a laundry list of them here. I have a list.
No, you have a giant list.
That I'm going to read to you. But there, if I had to pick one that is symbolic of all the problems with the film, I would say it's the Barrel of Monkeys scene, the plane rescue,
okay? Which is one of the high points, you know, in terms of action.
And that's why, because it's a great scene.
Yeah,
probably the best scene in the picture. Air Force One has been blown apart. People are flying.
I know, where you're going.
Falling to their doom. Tony's flying around in the suit going, how many can I carry? He can carry four. His suit isn't working. The clock is ticking. He's going to be a hero here. This is the Iron Man DNA. It's not the suit. It's the man in the suit that makes the difference. And he comes up with this crazy plan on the fly, and he figures out a way to, you know, collect all these characters. Just like Barrel Monkeys. Remember that game where we're going to grab all the monkeys? And he brings everybody in for a soft landing, and they give him a thumbs up, and wow, you know, emotion. And the very next scene, because it's funny, because it's, you know, juxtaposition, the suit gets hit by a bus and falls apart into pieces.
And you realize Tony's not in it.
And you realize it was an empty suit.
That's right.
Right? You realize that Tony was on a boat, on a couch someplace, flying a drone, which maybe makes our kids in Kansas feel better as they're dropping missiles on guys in Afghanistan. They say, hey, drone pilots can be heroic too. But it doesn't, as an audience member, it makes me feel like a cheat. You know what? Tony was never threatened there. He had nothing at stake.
Right.
And again in this picture, I think the big moments come up empty. Mandarin's a really threatening, scary guy.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he's Oz, right? Which was funny. I had no problem with what they did to Mandarin. It was always kind of a lame villain anyway.
Yeah, but how do you make the Mandarin work? I don't know.
But the funny thing is, in trying not to make him work, he was kind of working. In that picture, he was threatening. It's like this crossover between, you know, Osama bin Laden and David Koresh. And he's threatening, and he's shooting people, and he's breaking into your television, and he's, wake up America, and I'm coming to kill the president. He's a pretty scary guy. So there's a lot of heavy lifting involved in building that character up. That's my problem with it. There's a lot of script time that's involved in creating that character, which is at the expense of other characters in the film, which again I think was a mistake. Get to that in a second. So that we have, you know, the big kind of pratfall, you know, yank the stool off from under you. Ha ha! He's not a real character, which was funny, and it's as good as Kingsley's been on film since Gandhi, probably, right?
I don't know. People keep saying how great he was. I'm looking at it going, it seems to me like it was pretty easy. In both cases, in one case, he's playing an over-the-top terrorist-type character with a vaguely Baptist accent, and in the other, he's playing a British rock star that's been caught out, you know, as a bad guy.
Maybe so.
They were over-the-top performances. Yeah. There were no nuance in these performances at all. But everyone seems to love how great he was.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have to dig down deep. You know,
no.
He wasn't like Olivier transforming himself.
No, there's no there. There's no soul of these characters.
This isn't Robert De Niro becoming Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver. Okay, but in the context of the picture, he's very entertaining and he's
super entertaining,
right? And Kingsley's had he got the Oscar for Gandhi, and since then every picture he's been in has been worse, right? As good as he's ever been probably was in the Sopranos episode where he played himself, making fun of the fact that he's a hack now in Hollywood, right? So it was refreshing and nice to see him be effective on the screen. But man, it was a long way to go for a kind of a joke. Yeah. Right?
Well, there's a lot of that all the way through the movie. It's like kind of the yeah, huh? You know. And one of the things that I had a problem with, and I'm going to put this to The Curse of Three. Spider-Man 3, you got Peter Parker dancing around, and you know, it's because it feels like the creative team is bored.
Creator fatigue.
The creators are fatigued. You look at X-Men 3, feels like the creators are fatigued, right? Iron Man 3 feels like the creators are fatigued. I don't want to get in that suit anymore. I want to do some stuff. I want to do some change-ups.
Yeah.
But you know what? the audience isn't fatigued.
No, the creators don't have the creators don't have a right to be fatigued.
Right,
they don't get it. They're being paid too much, and yeah, I understand they're working with these characters around the clock. But you know what? I'm only in my 10th hour of Iron Man on screen. I'm not tired of it yet.
That's right.
And there's plenty of core elements of the mythos that we can get on the screen and enjoy, suitably reinvented for film, without needing to just blow it all up. And boy, do they blow it all up. All the suits blowing up like pinatas all through especially the third act. And at the end, Tony just blows them all up.
See, I'm okay with that if it held together. The thing that needed to hold together is Tony Stark is having major anxiety. Mm-hmm. But why, right? So we're told why.
Yeah.
And he tells us why. And he has these attacks when people bring up New York or when people bring up the alien invasion or whatever. But I never bought it. Not once.
Mm-hmm.
The character that I remembered from the first two movies and from Avengers wouldn't have been having that anxiety attack, and he's still able to, you know, have these horrible ultra-violent fights and be able to rescue people in the air and all these other things that would cause major anxiety.
Yeah.
He has no problem with that. But somehow, you mentioned aliens in New York and he has anxiety. So that's okay if that's what you're going to hinge the whole movie upon, but you got to make me feel that rather than just tell me that with kind of funny anxiety attacks. Frankly, they were funny. It's like, oh, kid, you know, don't tell me again. Oh, stop saying that word. Every time you say that word, I'm going to go nuts.
It's like the Knights Who Say Knee.
Yes, it's a Knights Who Say Knee anxiety attack.
Do not say that word again. Do not say wormhole.
So I had to be in Stark's head and at one point in this movie and say, oh, wow, I would feel the same way he is. Now I know why he's staying up all night making suits.
Right, and what better way for him to externalize that struggle and be heroic than to climb into that armor when the chips are down, even though it's the last thing the world wants to do. Getting into that armor is like getting into a coffin. He knows he's going to die in that armor.
That's right.
I've already saved the world once. I'm not going to save it a second time. But then something happens where it's up to him and he puts on the armor and goes. But guess what? Apparently anybody can wear the armor.
That's right.
Pepper Potts can ride the armor. The president can wear the armor. It doesn't matter. And then even Tony doesn't have to wear the armor because he can sit on his couch and you can drive a little joystick and fly his carrot.
The armor works pretty well without anybody.
Right. So suddenly the armor's not very special anymore. And neither is the guy inside it very special anymore. Because anybody can wear it. And the suits are disposable. Now, I understand that, you know, Mattel has a Master Toy License or whoever it is, and they got to get those Iron Man toys out there.
You can still get the Iron Man toys in without having to do that.
Yeah, I don't think you have to bring all the suits into the third act and have them fight in this very uninspired kind of, you know, Mario set, this docks with the girders and, you know.
See, I kind of liked it. I mean, I thought that it was the last scene, that big scene was an achievement. I mean, it really was. It was a big action. I've never seen action like that before. And the audience seemed to buy into that. The problem was I wasn't suitably motivated by context by the time that happened.
I wasn't motivated at all. By that point, it was a Transformers picture for me. It was a lot of empty spectrum.
Do not speak of Transformers.
I'm going there. It's just a bunch of crazy soulless robots flying around smashing each other with nothing at stake. Nothing at stake. And even our characters...
Pops was at stake, right?
What's at stake?
Pepper was at stake.
Pepper's...
Because she's, you know, she's dead, been injected with the stuff and bad things are happening.
She does the big Gwen Stacy fall into the fire and then comes out and she's Ms. Marvel for a little while. Yeah. Or maybe the Freak, right? What's the closest Iron Man... It should have been Happy Hogan that's transformed by the malfeasance of AIM.
Yeah, the Freak, right.
But instead it's Pepper.
And who's AIM? I mean, the problem with AIM... I mean, AIM is a bunch of guys in yellow suits... You know, underground someplace, as opposed to, you know, guys in Silicon Valley that we deal with. Right?
I know, and that's
just that wasn't right.
That's
a
fake.
We need more.
It's a shame.
Fake out.
I love Guy Pearce. He's one of my favorite.
Yeah, he was good,
and he was good in this picture.
Everybody was good in this picture.
Excellent performances.
There's not one bad performance in this picture. That's the first thing. I mean, the actors hit their stuff great. They hit their marks great.
Great performances covering for weak material. How much better might the film have been if they had something actually to say and actual emotional stakes? I thought this film was spectacle, but it was absent of emotion. I had a friend on Twitter ask me in the week afterwards saying, you know, how are you feeling about Star Trek, which is coming out next week.
Into Darkness.
Yeah, Star Trek Into Darkness. I said I have every confidence that it will be, you know, just as spectacularly stupid as Iron Man, but I bet you a dollar that it'll emotionally resonate.
Because it's number two.
Well,
they're not fatigued yet.
I'll give you that. I'll give you the fatigue. And on the Curse of Three, look, I totally agree with you. I think there's one good threequel that's ever been made.
Yeah, Toy Story.
Toy Story 3. And the rest have got a lot of qualifications, yeah buts.
That's right.
You know, the rest are at best half a picture, or they got some moments. But Toy Story, they pulled it off, but the rest they don't. So very high degree of difficulty getting a third picture in anyway. But the thing with Star Trek is we know that at its heart, unless they do something really crazy in the script, at its heart you're going to have Kirk, you're going to have Spock, you're going to have McCoy, fighting with each other, and it's going to be love and friendship and resentment and rivalry there, and that's going to drive the picture. Right. Unless the family show aspect. Yeah, unless they're total idiots about it.
Which they're not. It's a bad robot. They're not going to do that.
Yeah, I hope not. Well, you know, he doesn't end things well, our Abrams.
We're not ending it yet.
Yes, well, that's the reason I have great enthusiasm for it.
It's going to be a great picture.
And I'm glad he's going on to Star Wars, because they should take away the keys. Right? Don't ask him to finish anything, or we'll wind up like Alias or Fringe or Lost or, you know. Don't go there. But the picture, you know, we spent two films building up a pretty decent ensemble cast. I'm no Gwyneth Paltrow fan, and I thought I was kind of toned up during the first couple pictures, but Whedon got her dialed in Avengers.
And she's good. I like
Yeah, Paltrow. And she does no harm. She's just, you know.
I think she's better than that. She's actually good.
And she's really good. The time we get on the third picture, she's pretty good. Jon Favreau, aside from catastrophic weight gain, is good too. Right?
He's always good.
Yeah, he's good.
And he adds a humanistic aspect to the series.
And he spends most of the picture lying in an oxygen tent, right? You know, we're talking about how Robert Downey Jr. is so good he can make anything work, and I think that's really a peril of working with a guy like this. He makes those mediocre Sherlock Holmes pictures seem a lot better than they are, because
he's just fantastic.
And I think, you know, he could act to a toaster and be really good, and
he does
do most of this picture, because I think if you go back and run the tape, you'll find that most of his lines are with Paul Bettany as the disembodied voice of Jarvis, the AI. And I like Bettany as much as the next guy, but we've built up a pretty good ensemble cast between him and Paltrow and him and Favreau and him and Cheadle, and there's just those characters don't really get together a lot, you know.
Hardly on screen at all at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, he has a few scenes with Guy Pearce who could maybe chew up the scenery a little bit, but they don't have a real relationship. He doesn't. He has, you know, one or two scenes with Ben Kingsley, and that's all downplayed. It's all just kind of comic relief. So you have these assets, but you don't use them effectively. And I just thought it was a huge whiff, and the mistakes were on the tone and the screenplay level, which, quote unquote, should be the easiest things to get right. Now we know that the material factor trying to make these gigantic budget movies, we shouldn't be shocked when they're terrible. We should be shocked if they're good at all. And considering all the money
invested, this isn't terrible.
Yeah, and
it's not terrible. This movie is not terrible. It's just flawed.
Yeah. Well, flawed enough that you and I are both disappointed by it, yeah. I think. I'm not as disappointed as I was by Dark Knight Rises last summer. I was more disappointed by that film.
Yeah, I think it's a worse film. That's probably a discussion for another day, but I think it's a worse film.
I've come around to think that Dark Knight Rises is a better picture than Iron Man 3 was.
And that's why you're wrong.
Well, just because, I'll tell you why. Well, for one reason, it's got Catwoman. What's that?
She was very good. But so is Pepper Potts. I mean, they're all good in these movies.
Yeah, now I'm foolish.
Because Bane was terrible.
He was terrible.
He was terrible. So what I'm saying is Iron Man, all good performances, bad script or weak script. You're saying Batman, well, there's bad performances and it's got a weak script. And it's got Batman in a rope through half of it.
Yes, it does. But I think its themes are a little better realized, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, we don't judge movies based on themes.
Yeah, and both pictures, well, they're both third pictures, so it's kind of an interesting. At least the Batman picture was attempting to bring things to some sort of conclusion, yes. Finish off an arc and, you know, talk about what Batman means and his relationships with the different characters. Again, it was a flawed picture, and I've already done a podcast about why I thought it was flawed. But both these films have in common, there's not a lot of Batman in Batman 3, not a lot of Iron Man in Iron Man
3. I think that's true. Again, come back to creator fatigue. The worst thing about creator fatigue was the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Oh, yeah, the big reset button.
The reset button where, you know, okay, now she's been, Pepper Potts has been transformed into some kind of, you know, crazy superhero, heroine.
Right. Well, she has an operation.
Now she has an operation, now she's better. And you know what? This whole heart thing that I've been having to walk around with my t-shirt and my glowing chest,
yeah.
Now we're going to fix that too.
I don't need it anymore. I've come out of the cocoon. Now, yeah. It seems like that was a theme tacked on the end. It had nothing to do with, I didn't see, does that complete an arc for Tony?
Yeah, it does. It does. I totally get what he's trying to say is that it is the why must there be an Iron Man, and the man in the suit is the one thing that's the most important. But it was the biggest pull out the chair out from under me part of the movie at the end. And then, yeah, the Chinese version is sponsored by a milk company. So the Chinese version actually has a Chinese surgeon removing the shrapnel from the heart, and they have a big close-up of the milk,
yeah.
You know. So... You know, it's just kind of a. I don't know how to react to that. But I hated that in the comics too. I liked the idea that he always had to have this transistorized chest plate on.
Yeah.
Right. It was cool.
To varying degrees to get around that, but maybe you can excuse creator fatigue when you've been writing Iron Man comics 12 times a year for 30 years. Not when you're on your third screenplay and, in 8 years or whatever it's
been. You know, I thought Shane Black, you know, interjected a lot of energy and a different way of storytelling that I actually liked.
Yeah.
It wasn't the storytelling per se. What it was the direction the three acts took.
Yeah, but also
the through line, basically the through line didn't work.
Look, here's the thing: is that we're in a third Iron Man picture, three and a half, as I keep saying, and the audience. I'm going to assume. Well, I'm sure plenty of people. This is the first Iron Man picture, but I'm going to assume that most people that go, especially Turnout first weekend, that this is not their first Iron Man.
No, picture. I think they've seen it on DVD or yeah. They've seen it through Avengers or whatever it is.
So this is a highly educated audience, and they come in with certain expectations, and they're going to give you a lot of leeway. You can do different things. It's things they understand. So, I mean, if you're gonna change the format, that's fine, but make it better. There's pieces missing from the Iron Man DNA. For instance, Tony doesn't defy authority in this picture. Really. The closest thing he does to defying authority is like refusing to call home when he's gallivanting around in Tennessee or wherever he is with
that's true. I hadn't thought about that. You're right.
But yeah. You think about back to Tony in the first couple pictures, like, no, I'm Iron Man. You can't have my suit. And no, the military can't have this suit. And no, I don't trust you because you're going to weaponize this. Right. And in Avengers, he's stabbing Nick Fury in the chest saying, you don't get to have secrets from me. And I don't trust you, right? So he's this disruptive figure. He's
Steve Jobs.
Yeah, right. But I don't get any of that from this picture. That to me seems kind of core to his whole ethos. They didn't really violate it, but it isn't there.
They didn't touch on it.
Yeah, that's part of the character. So, and that's part of the reason I like the character.
Could they have done that?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, where would they have interjected that aspect in this particular film?
Well, there's actually a pretty good partnership between him and Rhodey, Don Cheadle's character. But there's a scene at the very beginning where Tony says this Mandarin thing, let me handle it, and Cheadle says no, this is government business, it's not your business. Tony goes okay, and then he has a nervous breakdown because some kid hands him a crayon to That's literally how the scene goes, right? That's not the Tony Stark I know.
Right.
Right? And likewise, the Tony Stark I know really loves Pepper Potts and would do anything to save her. In this picture, he says that he loves her, but then kind of just lets her go. He finds out...
Later that she survived.
Yeah, he tells the most dangerous terrorist in the entire world, here's my home address, come and get me. And then he lets the love of his life come to his house, and then they go to bed and go to sleep, right? And then the next morning, our hero gets taken out by three helicopters, where the last time we saw him, he was facing down an alien invasion all by himself. I don't really So I don't really see where the guy in this picture was the guy in the last picture. And maybe the piece I'm missing is I'm supposed to really understand his PTSD, which, as you pointed out, I don't think that's the
missing
demonstrated.
That is the missing unit, is they could never convince us that he was actually having these attacks. It always felt like it was a guy faking having attacks.
Now, Marvel used to have a comic called What If? That asked, what if this happened? But I'm going to change that to why. Why did this happen?
And I why? Three exclamation points.
I don't think this picture holds up to the why. So, or the what. So, what was our villain's plan?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Right. So, the standard, I started at the beginning of the podcast by saying I'm not judging this against Citizen Kane, then you derailed me. Where I was going with that is I'm going to try to judge it against other pictures in genre, maybe not even other superhero pictures. I'm going to judge it against the James Bond picture. There's a lot of, you got fast cars and beautiful women and high tech and, evil supervillains that have kind of technological plans, right?
And usually over-the-top plots.
And very over-the-top plots, right? Right. So, you could totally see Iron Man fighting Goldfinger or Blofeld or one of these guys.
Yeah, I think those are fair beats.
Okay. So, in many James Bond pictures don't bear close scrutiny. The plans don't make any sense. You look closely at them. But a staple of the James Bond picture is they're fast-paced, they're weird, lots of exotic locations, beautiful women, shiny lights that distract you. And when you're in the picture... It holds up. It moves too fast for you to ever say, this doesn't make any sense.
You believe that the villain believes in his plan.
Right, and the villain's plan is always really stupid.
Yeah, stupid. I'm going to steal the gold in Fort Knox.
Yeah, or radiate all the gold in Fort Knox. Whatever it is. Right? Or Blofeld is always, I'll sponsor chaos between the East and the West, and then I'll take advantage by, getting $1 million or whatever it is, right? But there's always some kind of stupid plan that you go, James, you better go stop that because... Heaven forbid there should be an earthquake in Silicon Valley and all the chips get destroyed that are made in China anyway, right?
Right.
Whatever the plan is, And they've gotten noticeably weaker. I think Quantum of Solace, they were like water rights for a condo.
Yeah, water rights.
Yeah, it was really, you know, they're out of gas.
That's like the tax dispute.
Right? So it's not like Wars. It's not like Bond's always done it well, but they have been the gold standard for this kind of fast-paced espionage sort of action story. And all that would be necessary would be for our villain, for Guy Pearce, to just say... What exactly? It seems like he's already won to me. He's already got the vice president in his pocket. Doesn't seem like he needs money.
I don't even know why he wants the president. I never got that.
There's some throwaway line about I'm going to control the world's, you know, the president with one hand and the world's scariest villain with the other hand.
They're telling us that, but I don't understand what it actually means.
I can do anything I want. Well, what do you want? You want to turn people into fire-breathing monsters? It seems like you can do that. Do you want to continue to investigate this hole in the brain that you show us early in the scene?
You can do that.
It seems like he can do anything you want.
You got money coming in. You have no problem with that.
And he's like, Pepper Potts, you're my trophy. So it was all to impress her. He's mad at Tony because he got snubbed at a party. It doesn't. Why?
Right.
What's his motivation?
Well, and you know, I'm blanking on who was the... Guy Pearce's assistant who turned out to betray Tony?
Oh, yeah. The world's the evil botanist.
Yeah, the evil botanist. Yes. So what was her name again? I'm sorry.
Well, I don't know. I've got the actress's name.
Yeah. Who, by the way, another great performance.
Yeah, she's good.
But her character is terrible because she's on their side, almost dies.
I've got it. Rebecca Hall is her name, a lovely woman. So she's the evil botanist. Now, Rebecca Hall shows up at Tony's in time to be hit by her own missile.
That's right. So the chances are they can't predict whether they're going to kill her or not.
Right. Right. But she starts out, when we first see her, she's brainy, then she's independent, then she's like a sex kitten, then she's concerned, then she's a traitor, then she's evil, she's not evil, then she's dead.
Right.
Right?
That's exactly it. They're all pre-programmed beats from a writer. The writer's hand was basically up her butt the entire time, making her talk.
And she was very good in all of those.
Yeah, she was a good actress.
But it's the sum of its parts because the character doesn't make any sense.
But I never understood what it's... I mean, the idea that Tony was creating his own villains is a great idea. That's a great thing to root the whole movie around.
I guess, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's a really good idea. But you never
got
the sense...
That's what they did in Iron
Man 1, basically. So, what, he didn't? He slept with her and left her, and then the other guy, he left on a rooftop, and that was enough for, like, to destroy his life? I mean, there wasn't enough. There's not enough there. Where's the emotional connection?
She had no choice but to turn to him for funding, and then Guy Pearce's character comes in and has this history with Pepper, which is, oh, this guy used to hit on me all the time. Oh, look, he's kind of foxy, right?
Right.
And then they stand up there, and he projects his brain, and he shows the gap in his brain.
And he's all, you know, solid and charming and able to do all the stuff.
Yeah, because he's gotten his teeth fixed or whatever. But I don't, again, that really doesn't pay off.
Yeah, so was Guy Pearce originally, you know, in his earlier long-haired, lame kind of standpoint, a good guy trying to actually discover science for science's sake, and then Tony turned him bad? Is that what they're trying to say? I never got that. I never got exactly what happened. All I knew is that he went from kind of a likable guy that I felt bad for to now an absolutely evil sociopath.
Yeah.
Right? Without any transition in between.
So why? It's a big problem.
Yeah, why is the big problem?
We define our heroes often by the villains they fight. And in this case, was found wanting, and it makes the pratfall with the Mandarin all the more wasteful, really, because you could have kept your foot down and probably pulled it off with that character, and he would have been a worthy opponent for Tony, I think.
Yeah,
certainly he was more interesting. So a couple other whys. These are lesser ones, smaller ones. Like so, the whole middle act, Tony can't get to his armor, right? He's got to go build
because all of his armor evidently is only in one place in Malibu.
Right. That's covered by rubble.
It's covered by rubble.
So Tony can't rent a bulldozer to clear that rubble. He can't call the Hulk and say...
Yeah, or the Avengers. Or S.H.I.E.L.D. Where was S.H.I.E.L.D.? Couldn't they have cleared it out for him?
He's got to wait until some day player on a contract rate manages to sweep the thing off. At lunch, you know, the union rules.
He's got to deal with the unions.
Yeah, I know. There's a bunch of armor down there. It's priceless. Costs hundreds of billions of dollars. But, you know, I got... Get to the bar.
You want it when?
Yeah, what?
You want it good or you want it fast?
Yeah, really? Really, Tony? So you're going to chase around in Tennessee and make your... That doesn't make any sense. Why?
But I like the beat. But again, the why is a problem. I think they had to make that work, right?
Yes, they really did. And you know, as my lovely wife Rita pointed out, having so many suits in the movie makes them feel less special.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's fair to say, right?
I that's very fair
blowing,
to say.
You know, my analogy is like, it would be like if the Indy 500 was composed entirely of Batmobiles. I might care a little. That might be kind of cool, actually. But it
we're talking about a new video game.
That's right.
Sounds great.
So just because I'm running through my list here. And this is a very minor point, but I'm surprised Marvel did this too. Because, you know, if Marvel has, for the most part, shown some real instinct in the way they're bringing these characters to the screen... They also haven't failed to check a tick box and take advantage of low-hanging fruit where it's available. And I thought they whiffed big time by casting William Sadler as the president. Now, I like Sadler. Right. He's a good guy. We actually have a connection to Sadler because he did the voice of the character that Chris Cooper couldn't be bothered to play in our Bourne Identity game.
That's right.
Or our Bourne Conspiracy game, which is another story. But they cast Sadler as old President White guy.
Right.
So why?
Why is the Marvel Universe so divergent from our own?
You can't do a black president and surprise anybody anymore. Thanks to our
well, maybe because you know they don't want to throw Joe Biden under the bus, right?
Yeah. Well, at least if even Biden, you would have some personality. You know, we could, hey, yeah, I love this suit. It's like my Camaro. I'm flying. Yeah, let's go. You know, saddle up. But instead, you know, why isn't it a female president? Why isn't it George Takei as president? You know, there's opportunities here to give that character, just because he has so little time on screen. And I expect probably we're going to see him again in another Marvel picture now that you've established who the president is. You'll probably see him in other films. Is why not give that character a little bit of, a little something to play off of? If it's an actress that's playing that role. I don't know who. I'd pick one off the top of my head, right? It could be Sigourney Weaver, God help us, or somebody, right? An older actress with some real presence and fire. Then the whole picture can be about, I don't need rescuing. You know, it could be her recklessness that leads her into this. I don't want this iron suit on my plane. This is nonsense, right? The character at least would have a little personality and have a little spark. But instead what we have is, you know, generic President White. It just kind of surprised me. Really just kind of surprised me. And maybe the screenwriter is trying to stick it to George Bush or something and make him seem stupid. I don't know.
That seems not topical.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah.
But, you know, he wasn't that way either. It's just kind of nothing there. So I think I've kind of hit my list here. You know, Fatty Hogan was when in the flashback scene.
Don't call him Fatty. He's still Happy Hogan. Come on. He's a good character. I love Happy Hogan.
He is a great character.
He's a great character.
In the initial flashback scene in 1990 when he's so heavy, you know, and he looks like John Travolta, you know, heavy Travolta with a ponytail from Pulp Fiction, I thought, oh, you know, this is cool because they've added weight to him digitally, so when we come into the present day, I'm going to tell it's a different Hogan. And it's like, you know, the guy's put it on. And, you know, we talk all the time about female actresses putting on weight like it's a scandal, so I don't see a reason we can't. It's maybe droll to talk about a man doing the same thing, but a little surprise there. And AIM, you know, what a waste of AIM, really. Yeah. I mean, AIM...
AIM's like now it's a t-shirt company. It's a Silicon Valley t-shirt company.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, what do they do exactly? Advanced Idea Mechanics, of course, which they call it out there. They even give you the acronym.
Yeah.
We love AIM because they're so senseless. And the thing that drives me crazy is that Marvel knows how to do AIM because Marvel, well, Joss Whedon did AIM. Because I think the two scientists from Cabin in the Woods are AIM.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys exemplify AIM. They're mad scientists for its own sake. They're kind of crazy about it. It's like, let's create a mental organism designed only for killing and put him in charge of us. Oh, no! He's gotten loose!
Look, here's what I would say about what is great about Cabin in the Woods, which, by the way, is my favorite picture of almost all time at this point. It's in my top 10. All
right.
But one of the things I love about that picture is that they had motivations that made sense.
Yeah.
They had a reason to do all the stuff that they were doing.
Incredibly stupid motivations, they hold together. In a James Bond sense, they hold
together. Yeah, yeah. They hold together. And they're true believers in the motivation, despite the fact that they're weary about having to continue to do what they're doing. And they actually have real feelings for the harm they did. Those guys would be the perfect guys to shove the third guy into the pit and turn him into MODOK.
To make MODOK.
And feel bad about it, right, that they're doing it. But they know they have to because without MODOK, they can't possibly, go to step two or
that
step
should
three.
Be AIM. Yeah. You know, if you're going to bring AIM into the picture, I don't need the yellow beekeeper uniforms. It'd be cool to see one hanging in a locker.
I want those at least to be called out.
But the closest we get to that is one of the better scenes in the movie where Tony's tied to a bed in this kind of strange, you know, with zip ties instead of S&M kind of thing. And
this is your favorite part, isn't it?
Yeah, it always
I knew it's where we're going to go to.
And he manages to break free and shoots all the guys. And the one bad guy says, oh, these guys are really weird. Let me out of here, right? The one guy runs away.
That guy was funny.
I mean, there's a little bit of AIM in that guy.
I wonder if Joss Whedon came up with that line, too.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, maybe we'll get AIM in the Joss Whedon S.H.I.E.L.D. show. They'd be perfect opponents there if they're not going to do Hydra or whatever. But it just seemed, again, that was kind of a, you know, it was a pratfall. It's like, hey, fanboy, I'm going to give you this. Oh, I'm, you know.
I'm going to take it away.
Yeah, I'm going to embarrass
you. Because you know what? I don't really care that much about comics. What I care about is doing a buddy picture my way.
Yeah, I'm too cool.
I'm too cool.
So here's the Mandarin.
We're all too cool.
Here's the Mandarin you love. Why don't you go ahead and obsess over all the rings he's, and, you know, what powers they have. And I'm going to, you know, he's going to be Oz. I'm going to yank that stool away from you. And again, that's okay. Yeah. But it's got to pay off. It's got to be better than just going through with it. And in those cases, I don't think it was. Well, I can't, you know, anything else you want to get off your chest? I think I've gone through my hell list here. You know, we haven't talked so much about the transformation of Pepper Potts at the end when she's got these superpowers and she's stronger than Iron Man at the end.
I mean, I thought it was kind of neat that they did that, and I thought it was a terrible cheat they pulled that away at the last minute.
Yeah, well, they... Yeah. She's probably not doing another picture. That's the subtext on these. All their contracts are up.
Right.
They're all getting ready to renegotiate, so they had to end that picture in a way that, hey, I can write you out of Avengers, pal. I'm not going to guarantee you another $50 million payday, so you better play nice and make this movie without you.
Well, I know they did that, but at the same time, it just hurts the picture.
Yeah, it really does.
Right? To have that all summed up at the end was just kind of...
I think she would have been better off dead. I think better off if she did the Gwen Stacy and disappeared in the flames.
You've been saying that for three pictures.
Yeah.
You keep wanting to see Pepper Potts. I like Pepper Potts, and I like Gwen Stacy, by the way. Gwen Stacy, only seen in a comic book when I was, I don't know what it was, 25, probably 15, 14, 14, something like that. I read that Gwen Stacy episode when she fell and he caught her, but she died anyway because, you know, whatever. She had a heart attack.
Yeah.
I cried. It really upset me.
America is going to riot next year when her pretty little neck is broken. And
they're never going to kill her.
Amazing Spider-Man.
They're not going to kill her. They're not going to do it.
They're going to kill her.
They won't do it.
They better kill her.
They won't do it.
Or I'm going to riot. And then, what do you think about Tony's suit pieces flying around?
I didn't mind that, but I thought they just...
I didn't mind it the first time.
What I wanted to understand is... Why was he having a nervous breakdown? Why was he making these suits? Why was he obsessively making these suits? And why was it just... Well, all we saw was the one that was automatically glomming onto it, but obviously he was making 80 different versions of the suit, including a Hulkbuster suit.
Right.
So that interested me. It's like, why is he making all these suits? What's he trying to prove? Who's he trying to fight against?
And you mentioned the Hulk. And that's the best scene in the movie. I think I do have a list of things I liked here.
I have lots of stuff I like about the movie.
We'll give you a chance to go over it. But I thought the end credits were really cool. They're very energetic and kind of grindhouse.
I love those, actually. That was very nice.
Really neat.
Very Shane Blackish.
There's some images rolling around on the web that supposedly of the opening credits. They were supposed to be the same format that didn't make it into the film for some reason.
It's too bad, because I like that.
I thought Mark Ruffalo's cameo at the end was tremendous.
That's fine.
Great chemistry between those guys. Make a movie between them right now. As I mentioned, I like the Barrel of Monkeys playing scene. Good cast, good performances of weak material. Stephanie Sozak. I like Stephanie Sozak a lot. She was
the crazy fire breather?
Yeah, so she shows up in the middle act and she says, I'm with Homeland Security, and she's the redhead, and she's got this, you know, this damaged face, and she has some real personality. I thought for a second,
she was really good.
She's got spark, and she's going to be a recurring character. She's going to be some sort of hard-ass S.H.I.E.L.D. agent or something I'm going to see from film to film, but, you know, she's dead within 5 minutes, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I thought she was really, really good.
Yeah.
Again, performances. I think Shane Black, as a director, got terrific performances out of everybody. Yeah. Don Cheadle, I think it's
Cheadle's good. Yeah,
I like the idea that he had to go to fight hand to hand to get his armor back. I mean, he's so much better than Tony at shooting.
And pretty clearly, he's available at a fraction of Robert Downey Jr.'s price.
But you know what? That won't be Iron Man. Iron Man's not Iron Man without Tony Stark.
Well, it was in the comics for quite some time.
Yeah, but who cares? Nobody read that. 50,000 people read those. Who cares?
I know 50,000 people read that, but as they have made us care about so many things that didn't work in the comics as well as they may, but have worked on screen, I think that it's not beyond the powers of certainly a Joss Whedon to make that work. If Disney taps him on the shoulder and says, hey, we're not paying Robert Downey Jr. what he wants.
See, I'm out. I would say replace, you know, have a new Tony Stark if you have to.
Ooh. Ouch.
If you have to, which I wouldn't do, you know, because I think he's the best thing going. I think he's fantastic.
Put James McAvoy in
to have that character. You cannot just make Rhodey the permanent Iron Man. Just won't work.
Yeah,
you got to have Tony Stark. It's all about Tony Stark now, especially.
Well, the sides are certainly playing hardball. There was a quote from Gwyneth Paltrow saying that she doesn't think there's going to be an Iron Man 4. Of course, that was before it opened to 175 domestic. Yeah. You got to figure there's enough money under the sun to get a fourth picture out. But you know what? I don't want a fourth picture, because a fourth picture is going to be like this third picture. All you can do is imprint.
Talk about fatigue.
Yeah, I mean, you'll imprint on everything that worked in this film and then give more of it. That's the insecure sequel model. And I, you know, I just can't have any faith that it's going to be any good.
They can pull. They can pull a Spider-Man on it and basically replace everybody.
Yeah.
You know, that worked in Spider-Man. I didn't think it was going to, but you know what? It did, and I don't really miss the old cast. So yeah. I just don't. The last movie was pretty good, and I'm looking forward to the next one, and I'm on board. It's like a new writer-artist team has taken over, and I'm kind of interested where it's going.
I guess. It's getting a little far afield, but with the last Spider-Man picture, I felt that it did no harm, but I kind of felt like I got lost on the way home from a concert, you know? It's taking a long time to get someplace I know how to get to anyway. I had already seen that story. I want more. I don't want to see the same thing again. So it felt like it was a very compulsory kind of perfunctory reboot. All right, good. Let's get to the next one, please. It's like, you know, Superman opens in a couple weeks, and I really don't want to see the origin of Superman again. I know I'm going to have to sit through it for some portion of
This one will be much more violent.
Yeah.
And that will be a war that destroyed Krypton instead of it being a random accident or super lava or whatever it was for the first time.
Yeah, that's right, because Russell Crowe's pisses people off or something.
Speaking of Superman, if it's like Superman Earth One, the graphic novels by J. Michael Straczynski.
So you like this
one? I'm totally in, just so you know.
Something you like, and that's a rare thing because you're not...
I'm not a big Superman fan, but I thought he did a tremendous job on those books.
So tell me now the things, because I listed some of the things I liked about Iron Man 3. Tell me the things you liked about Iron Man 3 as well.
All the performances. I think Robert Downey Jr., I like, and I like the snappy, funny dialogue.
I do too, he's good.
A lot of people said, they didn't like it. Some of the guys at work were like, I don't like the dialogue. I like the dialogue, it was just fine. Yeah. I like the kid. I like the idea that he was stripped and had to recreate stuff from scratch. I thought that was actually really cool.
Sure.
I don't think it was well realized.
Yeah, when those two are on screen, it's working. I just don't know why they're on screen.
Yeah, I thought that was real. Again, you know, I think to your point, why, that's true. But, that being said, I liked almost every scene in the movie. I didn't like the way they connected.
Yeah, and the movie starts and stops. And that's one of the problems as it relates to a Bond picture, which the better Bond pictures, which keep moving and you can't notice the seams. This picture had plenty of times to stop and kind of throw me out of it and onboard me again. It gave me a lot of time to kind of look around and notice that it just wasn't quite adding up.
Yeah. I liked Pepper Potts. I think I actually liked her more in this film than in the previous two. I thought she was more realized and more interesting. I thought Rhodey was more realized as well.
It's because they did so much work with her in those earlier pictures, and now you're ready for her to be a part of the adventure, and I don't think she was especially well.
I thought Rhodey was good. I thought the botanist, and who I keep forgetting her name.
Rebecca Hall.
Rebecca Hall, I thought she was great too. I thought she was an interesting character. I wanted to see more from her and what was going to happen when she was on screen. I was interested in what she had to say.
Yeah.
I liked Happy Hogan. But Happy Hogan was great.
For as little as he's used.
I actually liked the fact that he was, now in his new position as being security chief of all of Stark Industries, he was poking around and being ridiculous and over the top.
That was good.
I thought he was really funny. I thought the fact that he was super brave and, that guy's a guy that goes up against people he shouldn't go up against, right? Mm-hmm. You gotta like Happy for that. That's really true to the comics, and that was great.
Yeah.
I like Jarvis. I think they've turned that disembodied voice into a real character.
And that's well done. And really in my heart of hearts, I prefer he was a butler. But I know
I've actually moved over to I like the fact that he's an AI. But they're kind of like saying now we're making a new AI, but they already had Jarvis, so I couldn't quite understand what they meant by the new AI that they were making that was so different from the old AI.
Yeah.
Right. And there was there was some details that I wasn't able to follow as to, like, for example, why was Guy Pearce able to wear the armor at the end when it wasn't synced to him? That's a huge plot point because only Pepper and Stark could wear the armor.
I got the impression it didn't have to be synced to you. All that has to happen is Tony's got a point dramatically and the armor flies onto you. Isn't that what he does the Malibu house?
No, it said that it had to be that Pepper, they made a special point. I believe I have to watch the film again, but made a special point that Pepper was already synced to the armor. And that nobody else would. That's why she was able to wear it at the end during that scene and save herself and others.
Yeah. Right. I guess.
And then, the scene where the disembodied hand pulls Stark out, that was cool, but it didn't make any sense.
I forgot about that. Yeah. He's underwater. He's drowning
And, under, like, tons of rubble or whatever it is, and a disembodied hand would not be able to pull his hand off.
So let me understand this. A disembodied hand from Stark's armor
can
clear that rubble aside, but he's still got to get a bulldozer? He's still got to wait?
He can pull him out of it.
Well, couldn't he send his hand to sweep aside some of that rubble and get the other armor out?
I mean, I like the idea that Stark had to use his brains to win.
And they, a couple times they paid that off in the series, but they could have really paid it. That should have been the dominant idea. The dominant idea of this movie should have been Stark the man, he is Iron Man, which is what they say, right? He is Iron Man. It's about his brain. It's not about the armor. You take away all the armor and put him out in the middle of Nebraska and give him some Radio Shack parts, and he's still going to overcome everybody.
Which he did in the first picture by building his armor.
That's
cape. I give you that.
And they tried to do that in this picture, but didn't quite pull it off.
It's actually a good scene where he's going to go penetrate the Mandarin's fortress, and he's made some kind of crazy gadgets and stuff. I thought it was a little tone deaf that he was just killing people outright.
Right.
I thought that was a little... He's not Judge Dredd, you know. I thought... And maybe I'm misremembering, he disables a couple guys, but it seems to me he just blows some guys away, which I thought was a little over the edge. But and that does harken to the comics. I remember an issue in the 80s, you know, leading up to the Demon in the Bottle arc, where they made this very big point: Tony never gets in the armor. You know, it was him and Rhodey having their adventures and just being super spies and stuff. So that's okay, and I thought that worked pretty well. So it did show that he was intelligent. It did show why he was special. It doesn't make sense to me why he's doing that when he has all these other resources at his hand.
Scenes are good. Beats are good.
Yeah.
Themes are good. All the pieces of the movie are good. The problem is how they're connected.
Yeah.
How they're connected, and that's with the whys. The whys are all the connections.
And how they pay off, too.
Right.
Because it does, I don't think the movie works thematically, and I think it's absent, for the most part, it's absent legitimate emotion. Aside from when he saves those guys falling out of the plane, there's no real kind of fist pump, stand up and cheer, sort of, wow, how'd he do that?
Right. And now, letter grade.
Oh, when I walked out of the theater, I gave it a C+, just because the reality distortion field of, you know, being in front of this huge spectacle. Since then, I think I've fallen back to a C.
C?
Yeah, I give it a C.
I think I'd give it a B-, with giving the number two also a B-. I think they're equally, my mind,
they're
equally...
Close.
Equally flawed films. I think that they're both entertaining. I'll watch Iron Man 3 again two or three times before it's over as an Iron Man fan.
Sure, I will too.
And it's not the worst picture that Marvel's done. And Marvel has generally done good pictures.
I expect it'll improve substantially on a rewatch. Yeah. I mean, the two films last summer that really disappointed me were Dark Knight Rises and Prometheus. And I still think they're disappointing pictures, but I've rewatched them both since then and enjoyed them more than I did originally.
When are you going to rewatch Watchmen?
Yeah. Actually,
you should give it another time. I tried, by the way. I did try to rewatch Watchmen a couple of times.
I've seen it only that one time on video years later. Maybe I should try it again, but probably not. Watchmen was a film that hit me so hard it killed my whole family. You know,
I couldn't go back and read the comics that I read 50 times.
Well, now. It was like Phantom Menace in that it was so bad that it caused me to doubt why I ever liked the original to begin with.
That's exactly.
And then start to question why I liked it, and then look at the original more critically and decide, you know, it's not as good as I thought it was.
That's what happened with me as well. Yeah. So I think it is a pretty true recreation of the original comics.
Normally I say, look, if it's not the same as the book, so what? The book's still there. Go read the book. But this is a case of it, you know, actually, the blast was so intense it actually damaged the book. It's not good.
No, it's true.
But, yeah, I expect it will improve a little bit on the rewatch. I saw it with my family. Rita didn't much like it. Jack liked it quite a bit. Miles was off. You know, Jack gave it a B+, and Miles was off. I expect it will be better on a rewatch, but it was a third picture, and it was always going to be very hard to make this work. But as low as my expectations were, I still was a little more than a little disappointed.
Now, the girls all basically gave this one out of 10, they gave it 8+.
Well, that's
the whole family. Lori and the three girls all gave it. Mackenzie gave it a 9, but you can't trust Mackenzie because she'll go, you know, 9 to 0. But they all gave it above 8. So they liked it better than I did. So maybe being an Iron Man fan actually is a problem with looking at this movie. I mean, I feel like I'm looking at it from the lens of being a movie fan. I really do. But maybe being an Iron Man fan has actually caused me some blind spots. I don't know.
Yeah,
sure.
And they really don't need to play to us anyway, because we're going to show up no matter what.
Yeah, over and over again.
Yeah, so they've got us hard, and they do have to appeal to a broader audience, I guess. Well, certainly have to appeal to a broader audience. With a movie that costs this much, you have to make it appeal to as many people as possible. Yeah. If that includes putting crazy Chinese milk commercials in it, then that's what you do.
Well, it's a billion-dollar franchise, right?
Yeah.
And at this point, it's this movie's going to make second only to Avengers in the Marvel pantheon of movies.
Yeah.
And when it's all said and done, it'll probably make $1.1
billion. Yeah.
You know, worldwide.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
Much better than the previous two.
Yeah.
Much better.
See, to put a pin in it, I actually liked Iron Man 2 better. I think they're pretty much a dead heat, but I like it better because I think Iron Man 2 works a little better. It has more exotic locations. It's got Monaco. It's got a Grand Prix in it. It has... I love Sam Rockwell as the Hammer. What's his name?
Yeah, Justin Hammer.
Yeah, you know, yeah. He's just so swarmy and yeah. Terrible.
Yeah, I do have to admit, right? I liked him a lot.
He's funny, and, you know, it's the War Machine stuff is kind of confused in there, but... has that problem of a sequel, too much of everything. They kind of like, well, we take everything in the first picture.
Two Iron Man, and let's do two villains, and let's do...
It's doubled down, but I think I like that picture a little bit better. And not that either one of them are great. So, any concluding thoughts on Iron Man 3?
I think Shane Black's going to be doing more Marvel movies, is what I think.
He's doing Doc Savage. Talk about
that's a
bullet...
That's not a Marvel movie, though, right?
No, it's a bullet to my heart. It's
a DC?
Well,
who owns Doc Savage?
Doc Savage is a pulp character. He's most...
Yeah, I know. But
there have been comics of both Marvel and DC through his history. But to be fair, he's not a great comic book character. He's like the Shadow. You know, he's a great pulp character, a great pulp concept, not such a great read. You go read the books, they're not that good. They're pretty tone deaf. But the character and the mythos and the possibilities, if Danny Boyle was doing Doc Savage, I'd be so excited. Someone that could take an outsider's perspective and reinvent. Even J.J. Abrams would be very good at it. But Shane Black doing Doc Savage? Doc Savage is...
Well, I'm glad, because I'm going to have so much fun torturing you on this one. This is going to be 2 years of nonstop torture for you, because I have no dog in that hunt.
The radioactive half-life of my Joan Carter disappointment is just about worn off. You can run a Geiger counter across me without it sounding like static. And here comes Doc Savage. And you know Black's going to get anything he wants now because he's just, you know, he really can't play the Do You Know Who I Am card.
Rightfully so. I mean, anybody that makes a billion-dollar franchise, builds one up, you know.
I know.
They deserve it. And you know what? The reviews have been good, too. So I think the reviews are higher on average than our reviews are.
We're outliers. I'll give you that. But anybody that's stuck with us for the last hour should understand why at this point.
Yeah. And we legitimately like... The franchise and the creators and the actors.
We render unto Caesar everywhere, baby. Right. I mean, we're giving this movie plenty of credit for the things it does right. We're just disappointed because it doesn't do more of them right, and it just felt like it could have been a better picture. But maybe it's as good a picture as it could be, given that it's the third in a trilogy, there's all this money, all these expectations, all these sponsors, it's corporate.
And the creators are fatigued.
Yeah, creators are fatigued, and it's corporate obligation cinema. It's at its most expensive, so maybe we're lucky that it wasn't, worse. Maybe we're lucky it wasn't Green Lantern, which easily, could have been, right?
Yeah, so far the Marvel guys have not done anything to that degree.
So, seeing this film the way it is this raise or lower your expectations for Thor? Thor comes out in November.
So my prediction on Thor is that Thor 2 is going to be very good. Mm-hmm. It's the second one in the series. I think they have a lot of material to draw from. I think they've got a great lead actor. I think they're going to have a fresh director on it,
and
a fresh screenwriter,
and
they've got lots of great material they can pull from. It looks like they're pulling from the Walt Simonson stuff, which is great. And I said the same thing about Captain America. They got Winter Soldier, the whole Winter Soldier storyline from Brubaker to pull from. They've got a great actor, and I think we're not tired of that character. Yeah. I mean, Iron Man's already been, three plus Avengers. They've only been one.
True.
Avengers.
I'm looking forward to both those pictures, and when you say Winter Soldier, I pitch a little tent, right? My own little Winter Soldier pup tent goes.
I really wish you wouldn't do that.
I'm sorry, I can't help myself.
Over the same room.
But man, it's a lot of moving parts on that story. It's very complex because we have Captain America now with reconciling the Avengers business. That whole universe is part of it. Scarlett Johansson's going to be in the picture as Black Widow. Nothing wrong with that, but it's another character.
There's everything right with that.
I agree. But there's some screen time that has to be accommodated there. They've cast the character to play the Falcon. They've cast, they're going to have Winter Soldier. He's got a big backstory they have to develop. Maybe it's a third act reveal or something, but he still has to be a presence throughout the picture. They've signed a French-Canadian mixed martial arts fighter to play Batroc Zubidaire, which is like madness.
He's just going to be a thug in the middle of it. You know that.
Plus, let's not forget, they're bringing back Hugo Weaving as the Red Skull. Certainly, he has to appear in this picture. He's central to the Winter Soldier story. They'll bring back Toby Jones as Arnim Zola. Maybe he'll have an accident and wind up with his face in his chest or something.
Which would be awesome.
Which would be terrific.
I'm getting more and more excited the more you're talking about it.
Well, there's just great potential there, but man, that's a lot of... I mean, it's just the longest to describe. So, all right, you got 2 hours, 20 minutes for your bloated superhero epic. That's still a lot of stuff to get on screen. I'm nervous about that picture.
So you make it a buddy picture. You make sure that it's all about him and Falcon.
Yeah.
Right? You bring Black Widow in and out.
Yeah. so to speak.
And then the Winter Soldier is the villain being masterminded by the Red Skull.
I guess.
Matrix is in for I think that's like the first 15 minutes beating the shit out of Matrix the Libère.
Yeah, so you take care of him in the opening credits.
Yeah,
right?
it's all about the introduction to Cap in the modern era. But I think you got modern era Cap. You got him trying to understand what's going on. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of great stuff.
They're going to do Crossbones. They're going to do Sin. They're going to work all those characters in.
I don't know if they're going to work all of them in.
I think they are. I think they've all been cast.
Have they?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we might be sitting across from each other going, B minus.
Stop.
B minus.
Yeah.
Too much.
But I'm very excited for that story and for Thor as well. Normally I don't watch trailers. I saw the Thor trailer. I thought it held serve.
Yeah, it does no harm.
Yeah, and it betokened maybe a little darker story, but that's maybe, as you pointed out privately to me, maybe that's appropriate for this kind of Nordic, Sturm und Drang kind of Thor story. Maybe that fits.
Make that one's got to be a total romance. It's got to be about Thor and the woman from Earth.
Yeah. Right?
And I know that, I mean, all we have to do is look at our wives when that guy walks on screen, right? Everybody loves Thor. Everybody loves Thor.
I might jump the fence with that guy myself.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I got to admit, yeah.
No. When I say everyone, I'm basically looking at you.
Yeah, there's no denying, that he's tremendous in the role. But, he's putting on weight, too. He's a little heavy in Avengers, and I understand that he's thinking, maybe I don't want to sign up for any more of these pictures because the training regimen's a little too much, Don't want to. But maybe you take Fat Thor, too. Maybe he and Happy Hogan can team up.
I think this is a good time to end this particular podcast.
Okay, on that note, let me wrap up some business. Thank you, Mr. Ohm.
You're welcome.
For joining me with the last line.
Thank you for listening, guys.
Yeah, I greatly appreciate it. That brings us to the end of the show. Also, to the end of the experiment in terror that has been the Long Box Graveyard Podcast. Thanks for sticking with me to the end of this final episode. As I've noticed, with some regret that I step away from the mic, and I do genuinely appreciate the support of my listeners and readers these past 12 months as I've explored the podcasting form. Thanks to Mr. Chris Ohm for appearing on this show and his past appearance on the Few 52 podcast, as well as your participation in my blog. Chris, thank you very much.
Sure.
Go read Chris's Iron Fan post from a couple weeks ago if you haven't already.
It's brilliant.
It is brilliant. Thanks, as always, to Mo Christensen at We Talk Podcast Network, my long-suffering partner in crime putting these shows together. If they've been any good at all, then you owe Mo a heap of credit, because I never would have done this at all if he hadn't sought me out and made it easy for me to participate in this new form of media. Thanks, Mo. I owe you. And, I deeply appreciate, Mo, also all your attempts to talk me out of ending the Long Box Graveyard podcast. And I'm sorry if I let you down by bailing out at this time. That'll do it. Thanks again for listening. Please do come over and see me at www.longboxgraveyard.com. I will look forward to your readership and comments there. Until next we meet, keep enjoying comics and your geeky pursuits. Thanks again with the utmost sincerity for your listenership and support, and I will see you in the funny papers.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about. We hope.